Cars today are built to last, but how they look is up to you, and that's where Maaco comes in. They specialize in cosmetic repairs. Let's say it's affordable paint jobs to fixing those annoying dents and dings. Whatever it is, Maaco has you covered. With more Americans keeping their cars longer, now's the time to protect your investment and keep it looking sharp for years. Get started. Visit your local Maaco today. Get the free estimate and see how easy it is to bring new life to your ride. Uh-oh, better get Maaco.
I'm John Batchelor. The book is Fearless, Wilma Sauce and America's Forgotten Investor Movement. Professor Janice Trafflett at Bucknell University and her co-authors Robert Wright. We're speaking of Wilma Sauce now. It is the 1960s. There's a new spirit in the land. John Kennedy is the president, and Wilma is really sophisticated about how she protests what she considers to be the presumption of boards to ignore the shareholders. As she constantly repeats at meetings, it's a revelation, apparently, at the time. You work for us. We don't work for you. To the board of a management of a company. Three meetings in particular. CBS, 1960, after the $64,000 quiz scandal of fixing the outcome. GE, 1961, after the scandal of price fixing in electronic equipment. And ComSat, which is a new concept, communications by satellite, in 1965, where Wilma meets the Pinkertons. Professor, Wilma's getting stronger, and she's now famous, and she sits in the front row. Do the boards fear her? Do they try to manage her?
Both. And you start seeing in some even academic journals at this time, advice by some in PR to corporations on basically how to handle the Wilma problem is the way they would weigh in hallways and around the water coolers. Like, how do we as the board and as CEO of a company handle people like Wilma who are going to ask us tough questions at these board meetings? Board meetings, there used to be very few people that attended board meetings. And now suddenly board meetings are being more well attended and often by investors who want to demand some answers, particularly if a company is not doing well, either profit-wise and or on the ethical front. And meanwhile, Wilma Sauce is getting a greater and greater voice and in some ways is adopting somewhat more aggressive tactics. And in some cases, the companies at the annual meetings, when they feel like they've heard enough of Wilma, have turned off her actual microphone. So she starts bringing a megaphone into these meetings just in case she gets shut out, that she can still make her points.
In 1965, at the ComSat meeting, Leo D. Welsh is the chairman. The Pinkertons attack her. Does she sue? Is there an altercation over this? They physically restrain her.
Yeah, so she doesn't sue. I'm sure that she, in some cases, wouldn't have been above threatening to sue, but she never sued. But the Pinkerton guards actually carry her out of this meeting. So she's doing kind of the nonviolent resistance kind of the 60s. And she refuses to go out. And so the Pinkerton guards have to lift her up and carry her out. And this photo of her being carried out, and again, she's in her 60s by this time, makes many reporters who are covering the meeting glad they went to the meeting because this becomes the face of the meeting.
1970, IBM meeting, Tom Watson, the very famous chairman, presiding. Wilma rises and speaks from the front row. And at that meeting is a young woman, born 1929, Evelyn Y. DeJong, now Evelyn Y. Davis. Evelyn's very important because she's another generation. She, born 1929, she could be Wilma's daughter. Wilma inspires her. At the time, Evelyn Davis is a shareholder of a number of companies. She's come into money both from her divorce from Mr. Davis and from her father, who is a neurologist originally from the Netherlands, now living in the U.S. But there's a story here that's much deeper and more tragic. Who was Evelyn Y. DeJong? What happened to her in 1942, Professor?
So Evelyn Y. Davis was an incredibly moving figure to research. So she was born into a very prominent family, the Jejong family in the Netherlands. Her father was a very well-known neurologist, and her mother was a psychologist. And her mother was Jewish. So when the Nazis took power...
Mariana is her mother's name. Herman's her father's name. They're both doctors. Yeah. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. Yeah, so Mariana's Jewish. That means, according to Nazi law, that Evelyn and her sibling, her brother, are also deemed Jewish. Her father, in 1942, goes to the United States to give a lecture at Johns Hopkins. And the Nazis swoop in and round up their family while he's here in the United States.
Her mother, her brother, and Evelyn are taken by the Germans, and they're kept in holding Ben. I guess they didn't know whether they were going to be shipped to the death camps or not. At that point, yes. How did they avoid the camps?
So they wind up being on a list of what's called the prominence. On the list of the prominence, where a list of eventually grows to around 400 to 600 very well-esteemed Dutch Jews who apparently that the Nazis early on made a deal that they were not to be exterminated. And so they are rounded up and sent to the Barneveld Castle to be interred.
1943, right.
Yeah. And yet that deal with the Nazis doesn't seem to last. Wind up eventually being moved into a series of different concentration camps.
Westerbrook is one, and then on to Theresienstadt in 1944. Evelyn's a child. She's a teenager.
Yeah. And and interestingly, Viktor Frankl of who wrote a bestseller in 1946 about the Holocaust. He's in neurology as well, and it seems like they actually overlapped in some of the camps. The Davis, the Jung family, and Viktor Frankl. By the time that Terezin is liberated in 1945. Evelyn Davis recalls that her mother told them that they were very close to death, that they were starving, barely survive the Holocaust, but right. All three of them survive.
Mariana goes back to the Netherlands, yeah. But Evelyn's father, I think they divorced at this point. Evelyn's father is in the U.S. and asks her to come to America, and she winds up in a high school class and eventually graduating George Washington College. And making a success of a life that started out in horror. But the question, how does it affect her conduct? And she sees Wilma speaking out against these powerful men on the stage, Tom Watson and the chairman of the board. So she decides to become Wilma. How does she think of herself, Professor?
Well, first of all, in terms of that she definitely was suffering from, I think, massive and understandable PTSD after the war. And while it seemed like to the naked eye, looking at her kind of resume coming out of it, that she graduated high school, she graduated college. There's actually a question, like I actually tried to research whether or not she actually ever graduated from George Washington, and it doesn't seem like she did. And she was actually thrown out of another college because of relations with a professor. And she had was having a lot of issues immediately after in her college years. Then she inherits money when her father dies, goes through a divorce where she gets married to someone that she doesn't love, who gets divorced very quickly, is still profoundly grappling with the horrors of the Holocaust. And I think she goes into shareholder activism as a way of some form of therapy of trying to regain a measure of control over her life and particularly over men.
Wilma is famous on the radio every week. Mm-hmm. And Wilma is famous at stockholder meetings, shareholder meetings. in which Wilma reminds the board, you work for us, so listen, this is what we want. Evelyn takes up the same style, like a daughter imitating her mother. So much so you have a photograph in the book, I believe, no, I've seen a photograph in the obituary of Evelyn, of her in a costume, much like Wilma, although this time it's the 1970s and the clothes are profoundly different. I think she was wearing colorful hot pants or something like that. But does Evelyn want the same thing Wilma does? For the board
not
to be
exactly.
Responsive?
And Lewis and John Gilbert were kind of horrified by some of the extreme tactics Evelyn Davis would take. And even Evelyn Davis's use of costumes, at first it seems like, well, Wilma did that. But Evelyn was much more erratic. And so her costumes weren't really connected with a theme of what she was arguing at that meeting. They were a costume for costume's sake and for to attract attention for just attention's sake, which Wilma Soss and the Gilbert brothers both were a little bit worried that she was delegitimizing the small Sharoner movement by some of her behavior.
There is conduct, though, that suggests that a lot of people are taking up theater related mm-hmm. to the shareholders. I mm-hmm. note, and you note in the book, Abby Hoffman, August 1967. Mm-hmm. He goes to the visitors gallery in the New York Stock Exchange. And what happens, Professor?
So it's a great story. But so Abby Hoffman goes as part of the counterculture movement and figures what's the best way to show his disdain for capitalism. And so he goes to the visitors gallery and he has a bunch of dollar bills. And he dumps the dollar bills over the edge of the visitors gallery. So dollar bills rain down on the exchange floor. Again, it's a media moment about thinking about, what this getting attention to his cause. And some on Wall Street are enraged by this. Others think it's an amusing kind of prank. Of course, today we think about a whole other thing about, after this happened, they put glass enclosures to prevent somebody from ever doing that again. And of course, we've seen periods of time where the visitors gallery is closed completely.
But it's the theater associated mm-hmm. with the Wall Street's conduct, which is yes. what Wilma invents as
yes,
far back
exactly.
as the 1950s. Mm-hmm. I mean, she is the solid gold Cadillac.
Yes, exactly.
At the same mm-hmm. time, we have organizations that are important for the advancement of women in the marketplace. The National Organization of Women, I believe Betty Friedan in 1966, it's mm-hmm. As Wilma's economic rights was a follow-on for the original Seneca Falls, now is a follow-on for Wilma's understanding you must empower yourself by educating yourself. I mentioned that I've gone too fast, leaving out that Wilma believed in education.
Mm-hmm.
She believed
financial
in
education too.
Transparency, a distribution of transparency. She certainly believes in people being responsive to shareholders. All these things are automatic today, mm-hmm. Professor.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and
very true.
And yeah. when you teach this course at Bucknell, do the young people know that this wasn't true for most of the 20th century, that it was only activism like Wilma's that made corporate transparency critical for the investor class?
By the end of the course, yes. but I have wonderful students here at Bucknell, and I very much enjoy teaching about the history of the stock market. But Wilma Soss, yeah, she was ahead of her time. It's really remarkable. She also was wise in terms of as much as she was very interested in National Organization for Women and about trying to keep politics out of the small shareholder movement that she was organizing. She felt like it was important to have unity in the cause. Again, that's a lesson from the splintering of women's rights the early 1900s about what took so long to get women the right to vote, about fractions
right.
developing within the women's movement. So she tried to have it very apolitical to attract as many women and others. She winds up opening the Federation of Women Investors to anyone who wants to join. So it wasn't limited by gender about who could join the Federation of Women Shareowners.
Wilma leaves us in 1986 after a conversation with Arthur Oakes Sulzberger in the New York Times annual meeting. Evelyn Davis is with us until the 21st century, dying in 2018. But when we come back, we're going to go over the things that we've not mentioned that are a credit to Evelyn Davis and gadflies like Wilma. The book is Fearless, Wilma Soss and America's Forgotten Investor Movement. Professor Janice Trafflett is the author with me today. Robert Wright is the co-author. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs, in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.